We will call the Aurora Planning Commission meeting to order. It is November 7, 2023. Would the recorder please call the roll?
Chairman Joseph Schaefer.
Here.
Commissioner Bud Fawcett.
Here.
Commissioner Jonathan Gibson.
Here.
Commissioner Bill Grout.
Here.
Commissioner Craig McNamara.
Here.
Commissioner Jim Stewart.
Here.
Commissioner Tyler Masters.
Here.
Thank you all for coming. As always, we begin with the consent agenda. Are there any comments, which is just our minutes from the October meeting? Are there any comments on the October minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion?
I move to accept the minutes.
No second.
Okay, so we'll call it motion by Mesker, second by Gibson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, hearing none. Next is item four, visitors. I'm not seeing any visitors tonight. We just have Kurt. Have you all met Kurt, our new cog planner? Maybe not.
No,
I don't.
This is Kurt Fisher. Been our planner with the COG for a couple months now. He's going to be helping us with the text amendment tonight and then also with the economic opportunities analysis. In particular, the COG is going to do the mapping. They do our zoning maps. And so for the maps that are needed for that project, we'll use them so we have consistency in our mapping. That's the idea anyhow. And we'll also be working on the buildable lands inventory and then handling our regular sort of day-to-day stuff like Renata used to. So, Kurt, this is everybody.
Hey, everybody.
We'll get you here for one of the in-person UGB meetings or EOA meetings soon. And we have no one here in the audience. I thought we might have some HRB people to talk about code amendments, but I guess not. They were certainly invited. Next is item five, correspondence. We have correspondence from Wilsonville regarding the Aviation Board meeting that occurred on October 5. Pretty much routine business from my perspective. Is there anything in there that people would like to talk about? Hearing none. Item 5B is the overflight database. This is from the gentleman named Peter Schickley, who has been working. He doesn't do the day-to-day collection, but he, let's see what he's got in here. These are all kind of jingles. Let me find his thing. Okay, so he's got a email that he sent to a group of people about the overflight information, and he's trying to put together some groups on that. So any questions about Mr. Schickley? Okay, item C is the Aurora Master Plan Project Survey Number 1 summary. You may recall in recent months, Department of Aviation put out a master plan, and now there's a summary of what they call themes and takeaways. 467 respondents started the survey, 84% completed. So that's over 400 users. The summaries are on page 23 of the packet. Kind of the usual stuff. Questions on the survey?
One of the things that was pointed out was constrained flights. And I forget the percentage. Was it 8.5%?
Yes, somewhere around there.
Strain, which is, I guess, less than I anticipated based on the conversations we've had with people from the airport.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't mean that extending the runway doesn't have safety implications and all of that. I was just, it was surprising that the number was that low given how important an idea that was to convey to us.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that mostly happens on the bigger jets when they're going on longer trips.
Right.
So that probably
doesn't, with a bigger load.
Yeah. So that kind of flight probably doesn't happen as many as the smaller planes.
Other questions or comments?
They're not going to have C5As on there anytime soon.
Probably not.
Correct. Not wide enough. It's not just the length, it's about the width. Okay. Correspondence item 5D is an update on the Boone Bridge. It's on page 31 through 33 of the packet. And also a proposed bike and ped crossing. Two options for that bike and ped crossing, one just to the west of the bridge, one just east of the railroad bridge, which is upstream a little bit. Any questions about the I-5 bridge replacement?
Do they note the target date on that thing?
Last I heard was 28 or 29. You know, there's this meeting on the 16th at City of Wilsonville. ODOT's exploring options. You know, it's hard to predict how long these things are going to take, but it's, you know, it's going to be a while.
It's going to be a major project.
Yeah, it's going to be a major project. It's going to be a major seismic upgrade, and you know, it's going to be a complete replacement, as I understand it. That's because the current bridge is seismically challenged, and not just sort of the structure of the bridge, but the geology under the bridge. So it's not like they can just put some braces on there and so forth, like they've done to the I-205 bridge in the city. Well, super glue will do fine, but it's the stuff underneath, so they'd have to do new pilings or whatever. I'm not sure of the details, but I'm sure there'll be plenty of opportunities for the city to be involved in the public aspects of that.
It may not be bedrock down there.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. At least not where the existing footings are. But, you know, they've held up fine for, what, 40 years or so? Was that early 70s that went in?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I actually don't remember.
In the decade of the 70s.
Did we skip the DEQ notice at all? Or? Yes, you mentioned that the
E2
termination.
Yeah, we'll talk about that under the airport stuff.
Okay.
Okay. Then item 5E is the proposed metropolitan planning area boundary extension. There's been a lot of concern about this. The mayor's very concerned about it. He's going to a meeting tomorrow down in Salem. As I understand it, this has to do not with sort of Metro expanding its own boundary, which is set by statute, or at least limited to Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties by statute, but something to do with the way the federal government calculates metropolitan planning areas, or statistical areas. So,
I saw that Hubbard and Aurora are included in the planning area.
Yes.
What does that mean?
You know, people have asked that. I don't know. Is it sort of a warm-up to Metro expanding its boundary to include us? I don't know. I'm not sure how much this is driven by Metro and how much it's driven by the federal government.
Joseph, I can try and speak to that if you'd like.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Because I did attend the meeting, and it's not in my area of expertise, but I have participated in some discussions. The primary driver is the census. So the federal government has areas called FAUBs. They're federal urban aid boundaries. And they're redrawn every 10 years based on the census. So Aurora already had one of these boundaries established by the census 10 years ago, and they've looked at the new census data and reconfigured the boundary slightly. Then there's what they call a smoothing exercise, where they look at partial parcels that make sense to include, even though they didn't fall in the actual strict definition of the boundary. And that determines mainly distribution of, it makes areas eligible for federal funding, mainly on the urban roads, which tend to be the highways, arterials, and some collector streets, generally not local streets. But they also, and they want those to coordinate with the metropolitan planning area, which is also a census-driven boundary, and it needs to be contiguous. So they're looking for places where they can include those FAUBs, but still draw the metropolitan planning area, which is the Portland metropolitan planning area, to basically encompass those FAUBs for the purpose of making those areas eligible for mainly federal transportation dollars. I think some of the questions are, as I understand it, is how that relates to the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is mainly the governing body, and what the city of Aurora, what their voice would be in that organization, and to what extent they would have a voice in participating in the functions of that governing body. So that's the 10,000 foot view as I understand it.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
It doesn't have anything to do with the city of Aurora being included in Metro. So it's mainly for distributing transportation dollars.
Good. Good, good, good. Well, thank you for that. It's very helpful. Any questions about item 5E? Okay. No hearings tonight, so we go to old business. The airport land use update, beginning with the Aurora Airport Master Plan chart. As you know, the master plan has been kind of high-centered for a year and a half now. This is on page 40 of your packet. They recently kind of reorganized their project website a little bit, and they have this chart that explains that their working paper number one, which is the first three draft chapters of the master plan, is now on its fifth draft. So the first draft was sent in February of last year, and in May of last year, third draft was December of last year, fourth draft was February of this year, and fifth draft was August of this year. So they're struggling to get that first working paper approved by the FAA, and it's not something I'm tracking closely. I don't know, Bill, do you have any knowledge that might benefit the group, what the status is? Or
I don't think it benefits the group, but the Western region has had its top two administrators replaced and staff moved around, so we're doing a lot of new staff.
At the FAA.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, hearing none. Item 7B is the economic opportunities analysis flowchart. So this is a chart that I got, I think it's from DLCD's website. You can see it cites all their rules. I'm going to walk you through it because this is kind of like our work plan, if you will, for the next few months. Item one is the, they call it the employment land inventory. Employment in this context, employment land means all land zoned for commercial and zoned for industrial. And so that's our industrial land that shows up on the maps as gray. It's our commercial land that shows up on the zoning map, or excuse me, this comp plan map is sort of the moon. Is that maroon? What would you call that color?
Dark red.
Dark red, including our historic commercial. One A is identify vacant land, and Kurt and I have started on that. Kurt provided the last inventory, which was from 2008. And so we can use that as a baseline. And then you see the reference to the code or the administrative rule numbers in each of these little fields, if you will. And so we are closely hewing to the state administrative rules all the time. And so you can look up that rule if you want to see more detail about what's going on. So these three are kind of, the inventory will include all three steps in one product. So to identify vacant buildable land, you have to look at property that's not simply vacant in the traditional sense, although we do have a few of those, but properties that have only a small portion of them built on, and also properties that may be built on, but maybe their improvements are showing their age and they're kind of ripe for a scrape off and a redevelopment. I don't know that we have any of those that come to mind. A general rule of thumb is that if the value of the land exceeds the value of the building, then it's ripe for the building to be scraped off and someone to start over. So that's a quick high-level view of item A there. Item B is describe the characteristics of buildable sites. So that's where you look at, well, okay, it's item A might say, well, it's buildable, but it's vacant. Item B says, okay, well, you know, is it really buildable in the conventional sense? Are there wetlands? Is it in the floodplain? Is this slope too steep? We have a few properties here on 99, on the west side of 99 with very steep drops to the railroad. Those sort of constraints. And for employment land, with very few exceptions, people are looking at sites that are relatively flat and have good access to, you know, streets and highways. There's not much of a market for commercial or industrial land that is sloped. That's why you pretty much usually only see residential land on slopes. I'm working on a project at the office, property in Vancouver. It's been zoned industrial since the 1950s, never been developed. 29 feet from one corner of the property to the other. It's, I think, 3 acres, maybe 4 acres. So, pretty steep change in the grade, and it has awful truck access. We're working on getting a zone change to residential where we can, you know, tuck parking underneath and so forth and so on. use the slope to our advantage to hide the parking garage, basically. And so one of the things that you have to describe on the characteristics, they're all listed there in that rule, is, you know, proximity to transportation facilities. So in our case, we really kind of have three or four, I guess you'd say, you know, transportation facilities that a commercial or industrial developer would be interested in. You know, access to 99, access to the freeway, potentially use of the railroad by some of our folks here in town, and then access to the airport. Or proximity is the word that the rule uses. So you'll hear a lot about proximity, where I'm used to talking about access. I need to train myself to start talking about proximity. We need to, you know, follow the rule. And so then item C is you identify your short-term land supply. So that basically says, okay, how much of this industrial and commercial land that you have today is actually buildable, both in the sense that it's vacant or ripe for redevelopment, and in the sense that it's practical to build because it's not too steep or wet or something like that. Okay, any questions about the first step there? Okay, the next step, two, is the employment land need. So item A is and this is largely for our consultant, Johnson Economics, you know, analyze economic trends. Then item B is assess comparative advantages. So what makes potential employers want to be in Aurora instead of Wilsonville or Canby or Woodburn? We have some advantages. We have a much better access to the freeway than Canby, which is why they're always driving through our town trying to get to the freeway. We have some rail access, although no one has taken advantage of it yet, or at least in recent years. We have access to the airport.
Is there a siding in there?
I'm not aware of any sidings.
So what access do we really have other than the fact that it runs through town?
Well, it's there, and conceivably someone could put a spur.
Could put a siding on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And up by the airport, we have flat ground, which is, again, kind of a given. We also have an advantage that the land up toward the airport, between the city and the airport, is in relatively large ownerships. It's not chopped up, what sometimes planners call parcelization. So if you ever hear that word parcelization, what that means is it's already been divided up into lots of little properties. So that makes it difficult for a larger user to come in and do a project because it's difficult to aggregate the properties. Item C is forecast employment growth. The city can be as aspirational on this as they want to be. And so depending on what we would like to see for employment growth, that would affect the types of uses that we would try and attract. So for example, you know, warehouses don't provide a lot of employees. They're getting more and more automated all the time. Data centers are another example of an industrial use that does not generate a lot of employment once you get past the construction. Depending on the type of manufacturing, you get more employment. Other sort of light industrial uses, you know, they have, we call employment density, which is number of employees per acre. And it varies quite a bit depending on the nature of the business. And, you know, are they, for example, some businesses like my son working for an electric contractor. Well, guess what? He's out. He's not, you know, at the business very often. He's out in the field taking care of customers. And there's debates about how do you count that, you know. So the company he works for is in Donald. So do you count that as a job in Donald's, where this company has so many employees, pretty much, but is it accurately measure, you know, how many employees are like there in Donald for lunch? Probably not, but people move around a lot and, you know, we have to try to give them a home base to forecast that. And then item D is identify the required site. So once you say, okay, you know, what are the trends? What are your advantages? What is your employment growth forecast? Then what are the sites that you need? That's the product. So the site item D is going to be, you know, flat ground, minimum of so many acres, proximity to the airport, or proximity to the freeway, those sorts of things. Then you move to item four, excuse me, then item three, you articulate your objectives. I'm surprised they have four and they haven't drawn the chart aligning with the numbers. But item three is the vision thing, where the city articulates its objectives. Do we want to grow? How big do we want to grow? Do we want to take in the airport? Do we want to take in the airport in a little land, or the airport in a lot of land, or all those questions? So that's the vision thing that we'll be doing here with Planning Commission with help from other folks. Item four is estimate the land need based on the site needs. So if the site needs are we need X number of lots of Y acres, then you go, okay, well, X times Y equals Z. Okay, so item four is a pretty quick calculation. Then item five is you look at your land need and you sync it up with your existing supply of land. Okay, and that leads to another number, which is how much more land do you need? So if we need, just to throw out a rough number, 150 acres, and we have 20 acres that's available for development or redevelopment in the city now, you know, you just subtract what's within the city now, basically, from the top number. Then items six and seven, or you adopt economic development policies, and which would say, for example, we want warehouses because we think they're great and we can leverage good access to the freeway. Or we want to support the airport and provide aviation-friendly zoning for people to make widgets for airplanes and things like that. And then the last step, item seven, is you designate lands for industrial and commercial uses. What this skips is the UGB piece. So item seven is a little out of place. Before you can get there, you need to analyze the options. So when you've got your estimated land needs and your sufficiency or lack thereof, okay, in the UGB context, you go, okay, well, where are we going to get those acres? Are we going to go north or south or east or west or some combination of those? Okay, that's called the alternatives analysis. And that's not part of this EOA project. That'll follow this EOA project. We'll get a different consultant probably to help us with that. And that's when we start looking around. Well, if proximity to the airport is important, then maybe growing the city toward the south on 99 is not a good idea. You know, if level ground is important, well, then probably expanding the city to the west on the south side of Elan Road is not a very good idea. You know, or going east across the Pudding River, you know, what about the bridge? I suppose we should factor the bridge in there, proximity. So that bridge gets to be more and more of a bottleneck.
Yeah, there are times when it's backed up all the way down to the flat.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure the bridge itself is a bottleneck, but...
No, it's, well, no.
It's part, you know,
part of it.
If we rebuilt the signal...
If it was two lanes going all the way,
yeah,
the signal, it wouldn't be too bad.
Right. But if we fix the signal without fixing the bridge, it'll just move the bottleneck. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Okay. So any questions about the flow chart? Okay. Technical Advisory Committee. So this is one of the suggestions by the consultant, Johnson Economics. And, you know, often when you do comprehensive plan supporting document reviews, you have a technical advisory committee. We had one for the last time we updated the transportation system plan. So I've been working with the mayor. We have a tentative list of folks. This will include Kurt and mostly economic development people from surrounding government agencies. So we'll invite the economic development person from Canby and the economic development person from Wilsonville, and we'll invite somebody from Hubbard, and we'll invite economic development people from the DLCD and so forth and so on. And then we'll also invite some private sector people, including airport people, in addition to the Department of Aviation, but some private sector people who have actual experience in developing and owning and managing industrial land. We want to make sure we get the private sector perspective, but it's not just any old people. It's people that actually know how commercial real estate works. That's the plan. Any questions about the Technical Advisory Committee? Then the visioning process I mentioned before during the flow chart, I won't, kind of repeat that. There are going to be people invited to help the Planning Commission with that. I suppose we might give a new committee name for which you all are hereby volunteered. But we decided instead of creating a whole new committee and having a whole new separate set of meetings, we would just tack them on to our Planning Commission meetings. Any questions about that?
Nope.
Okay. Then there's some of our usual airport land use update. I've got one thing, and as always, we'll invite Jonathan to tell us about the PAM.
Not a whole lot happened. I think the last meeting before, is they had the elections, and Bruce Bennett is now the president of the PAM.
Okay.
And he was out of town. He lives in Australia this time, I think. So he always flying around somewhere. But let's see, the only other discussions were still relative to removal of the trees in the process of that. And what was the other thing that was written down here? Just a continuation of the controller issues. Air traffic controllers, trying to keep
staff turnover.
Keep the staff on there. And they went through a description of how they're going to have to shut down the airport for the repainting of the stripes. I think it's
A resurface.
Yeah. Well, there's the paint project and a resurface project, and both of them involve shutdowns of the airport for an extended period of time.
Okay.
So just continuation of discussions on those things.
Okay. Well, we like lots of discussions. I forgot to mention that the mayor and I have been talking about outreach. Instead of just having meetings here, going to present little things about our EOA and potential UGB expansion. And you're all volunteered to come along. We don't have a schedule yet, but we'll be going to Canby and Wilsonville and Hubbard and probably Marion County and maybe Department of Aviation meeting and other private groups like this French Prairie Forum that happens up at the OSU Extension and so forth and so on, just to sort of wave the flag and be available to people, give them a quick summary of what we're doing, and be available for questions. So they don't have to come to one of our meetings. You know, we're going to try to go to their meetings. And we haven't got anything on the schedule yet, but you all are invited to participate. And the same invitation will be extended to all the city council members next week. So please think about if you could give a little time to that piece of this. And then and my usual airport update, remember we got four things going on. We've got the litigation regarding the original master plan that's still sitting at the Court of Appeals. We've got the litigation, or I've got the litigation against TLM regarding the church camp. There was some big news in that last week. It's in your packet here on page, mixed in the correspondence. It's on page 28 of the packet. DEQ revoked their permit, their 1200C stormwater permit. That is something I asked them to do repeatedly over many months, and they finally did it. So that's, I think, a good affirmation that that agency recognized that, yes, what's going on at that property doesn't have a land use approval. So their permit's terminated. Marion County and the Department of Aviation have refused to do likewise. So there's a hearing January 5th where they're trying to get the case thrown out, and we'll see what happens. Then we've got the EOA, which we've talked about, and then we also have the fourth item, which is the new master plan, which we also talked about. That was the chart of the five drafts of their initial chapters. So that's the airport update on the four main topics, plus Jonathan's PAM meeting. Any questions about the airport? Okay. Item 7C, we've got code amendments. None of these should be unfamiliar. So Kurt, did you have a time to go through this Word document that Stuart sent? Or would you like me to do it?
My role has just been mainly clerical up until this point. I've just put the stuff in there that I understand came out of previous meetings, so.
Okay, I'll go ahead and walk you through these. They aren't going to be surprising. The first one is in section 16.04.030. This is the definition section of our zoning code. The first change, there's an awful lot of pages there with no changes, but the first change is on page 53 where we define recreational vehicle. Then the next change is on pages 58 and 59, which are the text amendments for the recreational vehicles. I won't go through those again unless anyone has any questions. On page 61 is our next change, and this is to allow retail marijuana to be sold up until 10 p.m. Code currently says 5. We think that's a typo. We think it was supposed to be 8.
Yeah.
But we're going to bump that to 10. That's not news. Then the next changes on pages 62 through 65. This is a good suggestion from Kurt. I think you may be aware of a situation we had on Yukon where someone wanted to, well, they just started building, making changes to a house to make it into a residential home, which is essentially a care home for five or fewer residents. And so we had some enforcement go on and made them get a permit and change their plans a little bit. But Kurt pointed out that we don't have a provision in the city code that allows residential homes. So that can be found on page 62 in red. Okay, then on, I said the page is wrong. So the code change on 63 to 65 is one you've heard me talk about before, which is to allow the city discretion under its own code to withdraw a decision if a decision has been appealed to LUBA. There's already a, has been for a long time, a provision that allows a city or a county to do that within 3 weeks, essentially. After an appeal is filed, LUBA's changing its rules now to give cities, I don't know if it applies to counties too, but more time to withdraw their decisions regarding residential uses, housing uses. So I think this is a workaround to the fact that we've been collecting attorney's fees for cities that deny applications for housing contrary to the law, which they do from time to time. So this will give them more of an opportunity to withdraw their application and avoid having to pay attorney's fees. That's my 2 cents on it. And then last, starting on page 67, we've got, I guess it's maybe not the last one, but the next one starting on page 67 is Jim's stormwater stuff. Jim, do you want to talk to us about this?
Well, it's pretty much what Clackamas uses right now. And it basically, it's taken off of the state Oregon Plumbing Specialty Code primarily. And that's, I guess we will cite that section 1101. There's just some modifications that I made just to eliminate any reference to Clackamas. Well, we need to scratch out the logo there. Basically, I wanted to start this as I wanted people to take a look at that and see if there's any extraneous things that should be taken out, any changes, any confusing language or anything like that.
I like it as is, but in order to sort of translate it into our code, I would like you and Kurt to work together on that.
That's fine.
The first question I have, Kurt, is should this be in our development code or public works code somewhere? You don't have to answer right now, but it's something to think about.
Well, it's definitely not a planning issue. It's more of a building code issue. So Title 16 wouldn't be the appropriate place for it.
Yeah.
But I think it's a, our building code official should be the, it would be the primary expert on that.
Can you help us translate it into our, the, our municipal code?
If there's an example of how that's done, I can. I don't have any expertise in building codes or plumbing codes.
Okay.
But if there's an example from another jurisdiction that's done that and it's clear enough how to move that into our code, I can do that. But as far as enforcing the building code or how that's usually done, that's out of my realm as a planner.
Okay. Jim and I will look around, see if we can find some examples and figure out where the building code is in our city code and see if we can get that done. Okay. The next item, questions?
There was just on the page right before we started the Clackamas County code conversation. It was just the one about the post office box, just a real minor.
Oh, I missed one. Yeah. Okay.
Page 66.
Page 66 clarifies that you cannot park in front of a mailbox. Then moving on to page 73, we're in title 8 here, having to do with noise complaints. Two changes. This is coming from Stuart recently. We've had some questions about noise complaints and discovered the code is impractical. So the first change talks about use of sound measuring instruments. It used to say from the DEQ, and now it opens that up. Like many things in our high-tech world, it's a lot easier to get good sound readers, decibel readers. And so we're opening that up for other people to measure sound. And
the DEQ reference is just reference to the education or the training to be able to use that instrument. We found a state university Rutgers out east that provides training. So that's an example, or another competent private body that could serve the same purpose, whatever would be more convenient. I mean, I actually met somebody up in Washington that had gone to that program and kind of guided me through. Hence, we're kind of having a conversation now just to kind of update the code and just take out the, the extra that doesn't apply anymore from DEQ headquarters. They don't provide that. It just defaults to the local government, and we certainly don't provide it. So, I mean, I can read the manual to figure out how to use the device, but, I don't want to have somebody that's going to catch us in up in a legal issue that throw the case out in front of the judge. It's like, well, we've got the training, and nope. So,
And then next, this is on page 75 of the packet, section 8.04.040 of the code. Subsection B12 confirms that loud animals for a period of 10 minutes at striking the word continuously, because what is continuous? No animal barks continuously. They pause and take a breath. And so we're kind of eliminating that confusion. And then the last item here is on page 77, having to do with sidewalks, where this is back in Title 16, where adjacent sidewalk is defined as the sidewalk between the curb and the property line, demarcated by extending the side building lines. Okay, so that meant an adjacent sidewalk did not include sort of the corners of your property, if you will. So that's created a hiccup in the code. And so we are going to make it clear that adjacent sidewalk means basically the sidewalk on your entire frontage. One thing that hasn't made it into this paperwork yet, but I figured it out in my mind, Kurt, is how to deal with the airport overlay zone, which is so confusing. And I'm not going to try and rewrite it. The idea is not to take anything out, but just to add the basic thing that what it really means is that there's a ceiling that's 130 feet above the height of the runway, which is about 294 feet above sea level. We have to figure out which sea level they're measuring it from, the 1980, I think it is, or the 1929 datum. But once we figure that out, we're just going to add a line or two to the existing code to say, when it gives that funky definition, we're going to add a line that says, this is at X feet above mean sea level from the 1988 datum. So we're just going to try and translate it into English. There's no, at least in my estimation, there's no reason to take any of what's there out. We're just going to kind of translate it into English, because it never really says how high you can build. It says you can't build above this thing on this, and all this aviation speak. So we're just going to translate it into a simple objective, height above sea level. It's way higher than I think the city will need for a long time, because the airport's quite a bit higher than the city already, which is why they put the airport there on the high ground. And then you go 130 feet above that. So it's not a practical problem. It's just a process problem where the language of the code is very confusing. So I'm thinking we're probably in good shape. I'll figure out, I'll get you some text on that provision soon, and bug me if I don't, Kurt. And then I think we're ready to ask Kurt to send it off to DLCD through the formal channels and, you know, formal notice. And then I don't think we're restricting any residential use, so I don't think we're going to need a ballot measure 56 notice. But if I'm missing something, say so, Kurt.
I think the property is subject to the changes in hours or the pot shops, basically.
Yeah, but we're expanding that. Yeah, we're expanding that. We're not restricting it. So that one won't need a notice. But does it work for you, Kurt, if I get you the text on the airport overlay zone? Does it work for you to notice that to DLCD so we can have it, have our first hearing in January?
Yes. The only other question that I keep asking is whether or not you want the non-Title 16 amendments, the ones that are not related to the development code, the land use code, to go through the same DLCD process.
Yeah, it's I do. We just want to keep them all together, and it's okay if DLCD says, well, you know, what's up with this thing? And we can just tell them, well, we're doing all our code updates at the same time. And
my apologies.
Then probably the longest lead item would be how to deal with the plumbing code.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so that's on Jim and I. But since it's, yeah, fair enough. That's on Jim and I. Okay, we'll get going on that.
I wanted to bring up something, if you don't mind, Joseph. I don't know that we need to really have a requirement in our code for training necessarily. As long as you can operate the device based on the instructions that come with the device to get an accurate hearing, that could be admissible, or that it doesn't.
I think that's fair.
Because to rely
on one more training.
Yeah, another training and more budget.
Which will happen 3 years before you actually.
I imagine it's, I mean, and not only that, this never comes up, almost never.
Right.
You got to the point where I was dealing with a woman who almost like she wanted to move out of town because she was getting so aggravated with this situation. And
right.
Confirmed, but denied by, depending on what neighbor you spoke with, it was like this mess of a situation I was dealing with for about a month and a half. And attorney weighed in on it. And I mean, I've got a rewrite actually going right now, just so they would. But basically require the use of the device instructions to effectively use the instrument to take an accurate noise recording. That's a golden cord or something like that.
It works for me.
You guys are cool with that. Because for one thing, most people are not using these devices anymore anyways. Okay. County took it out of its code.
Okay.
And I don't know if they've lost it purposely, but there's a separate calibration device that goes with the actual, you know, the dusted, I mean, it's not being used, hasn't been used in a long time. And most city police departments, if they have them, haven't been used in 20 years, like the one we got that was sitting down at Turner. So it's like, it doesn't make sense. You work with neighbors, you try to kind of shut down the problem in an alternative way, but trying to get that to court, it would never fly to use a decibel. The continuous thing, we removed that because, you know, it's not continuous as in a machine is continuous. So it just, I don't know, I got schooled by somebody that had attended the scriptors
Right.
Program out east, and gave me a little bit of a sense. That's why we're doing this now.
Okay.
This code enforcement issue that it surfaced and didn't go anywhere. So.
All right.
Well, I'll get that rewrite on into this. And
good.
Thank you for all your help.
Good. Okay. That's all we have on our agenda. Anything else for the good of the order?
No.
All right, hearing none, we will adjourn at 7:54 p.m.
So 3 feet north and to the south.
Thank you.
3 foot elevation. Thank you.